What's up, people? It's your friendly neighborhood pharmacist, and I am back again for another episode of Health Facts. And I am super excited to be here today because today is a very special day. We have our first ever guest, and I'm super excited to introduce him to you because he is Oklahoma born,
yep,
Oklahoma bred, mm-hmm. and Oklahoma licensed physician, right. Dr. Benjamin Morrell.
Right.
I don't know if I said it right.
Yeah,
do I call you Benjamin, Benji, Ben?
Benjamin's fine.
Benergy.
Yeah.
I saw Benergy.
Benergy's also fine.
Yeah. All right.
It depends on how far we take it, but yeah.
All right, Benjamin. I think I should let you take the stage right now and introduce yourself. Let us know who you are, where you're from, what you do.
Absolutely. Like I said, my name is Benjamin Morrell. I grew up in Blanchard, Oklahoma. And then I ended up going to University of Central, or OCCC in Oklahoma City for community college first. And then from there to University of Central Oklahoma, where I got my bachelor's.
That's
and then, right. And then from there, I went to University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center for my degree in medicine.
Awesome.
From there, I matched into psychiatry residency at Wake Forest. And after completing intern year, I had made the decision to go out and start my own general practice and really get into the performance coaching and confidence coaching game on the internet. So doing a couple of things right now.
Cool. Well, tell me more. Tell me more about your other business, performance coaching.
Right. So after going through that first year and a half or two of residency, I sort of saw how the medical system operated, and those good people are doing the best that they can with what they have, but I recognize that it was lacking in a couple of areas, particularly in the management of long-term and chronic diseases. And that really starts with people's lifestyles and their mindsets,
yeah.
and their attitudes and their energies. And I really started focusing on those with my patients, and not near as much as the straight up pharmacology, the straight up clinical side of things. It was more about motivating the person from within and getting them to buy into their own value, their own potential, and getting them to act on it. And that just started this whole cascade and flood of me going out and looking at this stuff. And I was like, wow, this is really powerful. And then blending it with some of the research I had seen where you're truly changing people's epigenetics. You're truly changing the shape of people's minds, and everything else follows suit. So I had to get out there and go experience that.
That's good. That's awesome. I think that's something I talk about here a lot, internal locus of control.
There we go.
Yeah, you gotta strengthen that to get through life. I mean, you can't always depend on other people So I just wanted to ask you real quick, because I feel like, I just need to know. So how do you feel being my first guest ever on this wonderful podcast?
Right. No, it's all, like I said, it's an absolute honor to even to sit down and talk with anybody, anytime, as long as it's real.
Mm-hmm.
I made a deal with myself that I'm going to do that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm a firm believer in depth, not width. So one valuable conversation is more valuable to me than 1,000 superficial weak ones. So,
well, thank you for being here. That makes me feel so good.
Right. We can't go wrong.
All right. So I wanted to know, I know you talked a little bit about kind of your experience in residency, but tell me about your experience in healthcare. What has brought you to this point where you've made this decision?
Well, ultimately, looking at it from as far away as you can, and you look at the United States, and we're supposed to be the healthiest and the wealthiest, but it's not necessarily true. We're honestly quite mentally ill, quite sick, and
yeah.
chronic diseases.
Yeah.
Everybody is struggling at some level with obesity or depression, anxiety, or autoimmune diseases are big too. So really, just seeing the surplus of issues and the lack of resources to really, get involved and to make real changes in your life and other people's lives. I wasn't so comfortable with really just going in and doing a 15-minute assessment whenever this person needs really months of consistent, education, redirection, and working with them. And the system ultimately keeps providers from having that time, mm-hmm. puts a lot of rules, a lot of regulations, a lot of paperwork. The whole burnout phenomenon is like brutal. We're looking at about, you know, a third to over half, depending on what specialty you're in medicine, are burned out. Mm-hmm. And one of the most shocking ones to me, statistics-wise, was one out of six physicians has like suicidal thoughts.
Wow.
Yeah. So my residency size, my residency class was seven. So I was like, okay, which one are you?
Dang, that's crazy.
Yeah. So if the people treating the people are sick and not taking care of themselves, what's gonna happen?
Yeah.
So the sheer hypocrisy of that really kind of spurred me from it. And then of course, really was I was running towards the light with what I was doing. I wasn't running away from like how bad the system was. Mm-hmm. Let's not get it twisted, but. It was definitely a motivating factor to, you know, try to seek a more positive environment, a growing environment. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel you on that. Like, because even in pharmacy, it's kind of similar. And the burnout is also kind of a thing, especially if you work retail. It's like go, 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 like fast paced. I mean, I remember joking sometimes, but I'd be like working long hours and I'd be like holding out on like going to use the restroom because like I can't leave because if I leave for 2 seconds, I get behind. So it's kind of insane. And then there's also like you're trying to meet metrics and all that stuff. So, and it was one of the reasons why I got into public health, because I felt like, okay, I wanted to help people, but I feel like I'm not doing it because I'm like focusing on like meeting numbers and stuff. And then there's so many people, there's not enough help. So there's not like enough time. So you're just trying to get people out. You're not like taking the time to help them. It's kind of crazy, but.
Well, so like my first thought is, it's funny that you say that, but one of the first things I do in my program I'm doing now is helping people go through the stages of their psychological needs. And the first one is like food, fire, water, shelter, and like bodily functions and health. And here we have like doctors, like graduates that are unable to even, you know, use the restroom because that's how stressful the environment is.
Yeah.
Like, do you really think that they're going to be having those higher order thoughts and self-connection periods that we need to thrive as people and community in those environments? And it's not saying it's impossible, but it's difficult.
It's hard, it's hard. And it's kind of crazy that that's what we experience in healthcare, because like, I think people looking in outside probably think like, oh, that's an awesome job, but though it's like pretty stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a special kind of person, so I appreciate you sticking it out and doing what you do, for real though,
Well, thank you. Thank you, I think it's a lot better. I would tell you like when COVID started, that was like the worst time. It was like 10 times busier than usual, so it was a pretty crazy time, but. It's not too bad. I still like it. But anyways, I actually wanted to talk a lot about mental health this this episode, because this month is Mental Health Awareness Month. So I thought it would be really cool to have someone that's kind of an expertise or expert in that area to kind of talk on it a little bit. So I mean, I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure a lot of people have questions also. But I kind of just created a list of questions that I consider to be like frequently asked questions, so that maybe it will like cover some of the concerns that people may have about their mental health. So one of the first ones that I had is like, in your words, like based on your experience, what would you, or how would you describe mental health?
So my way of looking at things is all about functionality and where you're at. The model that I like to follow is the biopsychosocial model.
Okay.
And so bio is like, you know, it's your biology. Psycho is your psychology. And then what was the last one I said?
Social.
There you go. Biopsychosocial, spiritual, I should say. There's another one. So social is like your social climate, your social environment in the community. And then your spiritual component, because with some people that is just so powerful that it like blows the rest of them away.
Oh, yeah.
And we've all seen that, I think, at some point in time in our lives, where it's like, how is that person doing that? So I had to group that in. And so, yeah, I just look at how well that person is functioning across, you know, those four kind of modalities or planes. And you look at their biology. Are they capable and able to do the things that they want to do? Do they know what they actually want to do? And do they have a community that reminds them of who they want to be, because we all need to have our egos checked and to be around people that we share in common, ultimately. And then finally, like, what is their relationship with, you know, their spirituality or their selves or their Darwin, I don't, whatever each individual person has, right?
Yeah.
And then usually if somebody is functioning across those four areas, to me, they are going to be, you know, mentally healthy.
Okay. That's good to know. I've never heard that before. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to go on to the next question. So what are some factors based off of what you said, you've described mental health to be, what are some factors that you think will cause someone to deviate from that, like what you consider a normal or for that person specifically?
Mm. Okay. So this is where I would typically utilize the five pillars of wellness.
Okay.
Sleep is the first one, exercise, nutrition, social interaction, relationships, and then meditation, and that includes, like, you know, flow, reading, some of the spirituality stuff. So whenever I'm breaking somebody down and looking at their case, whether that be in a clinical side of things or in a for my program, I look at them across those five things. This is called completing the wheel. So if you made a wheel of those five things, like a pie diagram, where are you at for each one? And whenever somebody comes to me and I put them within that wheel, it's like you could be doing everything right, but if you're only sleeping 5 hours a night, 4 hours a night, you're gonna be garbage, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, so usually I'm looking at that pie chart and I'm seeing to see where people are lacking, and then I plug in what the practices that need to happen to complete that wheel and to bring that center of you know, wholeness, oneness, and where everything is operating together.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Another thing is, I know that, like, sometimes people have struggles with their mental health, but a lot of times people are not aware of it.
Mm.
So how do you think people can, like, try to, like, take the time to identify, like, oh, this is my struggle, or this is, like, what's causing my struggle? Like, how can they be more aware of their mental health?
So this one is difficult because I was actually there at some point in time. I'm like, hey, depressed. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I was forced into an environment where I had to learn it. And I remember distinctly remembering in my psychiatry rotation third year and some of the lectures in second year reading this stuff and being like, this sounds really familiar. Like, too close to home familiar. So that's how I got my exposure. Of course, average people are not going to go out and seek that kind of in-depth medical knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to learn for the average person is through stories, through examples, through other people in their lives, sharing and appreciating your story, my story. That's what helps us recognize that, oh, we all have things going on, struggles, difficulties, pains, traumas, frustrations. But we're also all able to overcome those things, and if anything, utilize them to be better and stronger people. Seeing that process happen in your life will fundamentally change you. And that's what put me on this path, ultimately, seeing that happen in real life.
That's true. I mean, I will say, like, I feel like a lot of people in healthcare do get that experience at some point, and I did when I was in pharmacy school. And my struggle was more anxiety than anything. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, like, your background has a lot to do, like, your ability to manage, like, anxiety, or, like, how likely you are to get, like, anxiety episodes. And I think, like, mine was, like, okay, I'm Nigerian. Nigerian. And one of the things with being Nigerian is, like, and, like, the culture-wise, growing up, they're, like, expectations. So when you grow up, you have to be a doctor, a lawyer,
right,
or an engineer. Mm-hmm. Those are the options. Mm-hmm. Those are the options. And then, you know, you go into school and you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, I got to meet these expectations. Mm-hmm. Growing up, my parents were, like, kind of good with, like, not putting pressure mm-hmm. on me, or, like, you know, expecting me to, like, meet certain goals. I mean, I have stories, like, when I was younger, in, like, high school, like, I was, like, 9, and most of my classmates were 9, and kids will, like, get their report cards, and they'd be, like, crying, and they'd be, like, they're not going home. They're in school waiting, like, they don't want to go home because they're afraid of the consequences of their bad grades, and I was that kid, like, oh, okay, I just, like, hop all the way home, because even though, like, even if my grade's not, like, perfect, I know, like, my parents are not gonna, like, I mean, they care, they talk to me about it, but there's no like serious consequence.
Well, that's healthy, right?
Yeah,
that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, which is great. I give them like 100% credit on that, but like not everyone had to deal with that. And so a lot of like cultures, like African cultures, like even some Asians that I know of, like they tend to have more anxiety because their parents or like how they grew up, there were always like expectations.
Yeah.
Of, you know, this
yeah,
is what
yeah.
you have to do. And I think that kind of raises like the threshold for like how, or I guess decreases the threshold of like how much you can handle before you kind of lose it.
Yeah.
So I think that, so in my personal experience, it was like, I didn't realize that it was something that I had to, until I got to a point where like, oh, I hit the threshold and I was like, dang. Yeah. And then it was like, when you're also another thing, and it's another question I wanted to ask you is like, when you're surrounded by people who do not believe in like mental illness or like mental health conditions, then you kind of like, when you're having those kinds of issues, you don't really like care, you don't really think, you kind of push it aside because you're like, oh, it's not real. And then when you talk to other people, they're like, oh, that's not real. So how do you handle that? How do you handle like being surrounded by people who do not like identify or validate like your feelings? Or
so this is something I also went through, you know, growing up in Oklahoma is, last time I checked, was second or third out of all of the states for essentially the worst mental health. And so it's a culture here, really.
Yeah.
It's a culture of like everybody's going to be a little bit that way and shifted. Mm-hmm. It's not one person, it's kind of everybody. And, you know, my father's, you know, half Native American and he grew up in a much different time. But really their attitude was like, you just don't show that, you don't talk about it, you're just going to bully your way through this. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I was, you know, and really struggled with that fact and relating with other people's experiences. And honestly, it makes you go a little bit crazy. Like whenever it feels like you're, like I'm looking at the world, right? As a young person, I'm looking at the world, I'm like, yo, this is crazy right now. Like I'm feeling crazy looking at the stuff that's going on. It's like, is no one else asking these questions about the general functioning of society? War, you know, like, you know, racism and like, there's just all kinds of stuff where it's like, these are real questions and yet like nobody's really talking about it. The news kind of talks about it only in a negative fashion.
Yeah.
It really creates a dissociation between, you know, people. When I started isolating, thinking that I were different than other people, like we had nothing in common. In reality, we had everything in common. We just didn't communicate or share those between each other. So step one for me, which what happened right after my like med school awakening or meltdown and then awakening, was to be open with my thoughts, my mind, my experiences, and you know, craziness afterwards was I got absolutely nothing but love, appreciation, and people were like, "Yo, thank you for saying this. Like, thank you for, you know, not just being in my position, but just coming out and having, you know, the gall to say what you said. Like, I deal with these things. It's real. Anxiety's for sure. It's definitely, it's tangible. I can literally feel it."
Yeah.
And then ways to like overcome it. People greatly appreciate that.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that it's really nice that we're getting into that culture where they're trying to take away the stigma from like anxiety, you know, mental health, like related issues. And I think that it's great that they're doing that because there has always been a stigma associated with it. Like people do not want to identify as someone with a mental illness. Mm. And I think kind of in a way the pandemic did bring some light to it because now people are more like open or people are more aware. However, do you think that there's been any changes in like in the policies or how mental illness is being managed? Like I would say in the nation as a whole, because I know that that's something that just being in public health, I know that it's something that hasn't really gotten a lot of attention and there's not really a lot of funding in it. So a lot of people don't go into like fields like what you're doing, for example, like people don't want to do that because there's no money there. Mm. But do you think that with what's happening, with the fact that people are more aware of it, that there's going to be more?
Well, there's going to be a surge, undoubtedly.
And so?
There already is a huge, there already is one. People are looking for others who are able to have these conversations and want to have them and that are also like appropriately trained and credible to do that. This pandemic shifted everything because now it did more for telemedicine in 3 months than the history of it, because like everybody went to online, everybody went to digital, And all of a sudden, the whole nation is shoved into their homes with only their thoughts and their minds and their families that they actually don't like that much, turned out. Which is, I'm being pessimistic.
True.
But I was in the emergency department working with those folks. So like you only saw worst case scenarios.
Yeah, no, it's true. I like, cause in my apartment, when the pandemic started, my neighbors upstairs, like every day there was a fight, like every single day. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Like I keep hearing about this, but I'm living it like vicariously. It's insane.
It's like watching a drama through the wall.
I can't even slam doors. Oh, goodness. Yeah, but it's kind of crazy. But okay, so let's see. This question, I don't know if there's an answer to it, maybe you know, but is it possible to avoid or prevent mental illness? Is that even possible?
Yeah, for a lot of them. Some of them, we really bring it on ourselves, and that's another argument I could have is, you know, who gets to call it depression? Because people kind of claim that title, even though it's like you drank an energy drink late, and then you ate a bunch of trash food, had a hurt stomach, you stayed up late scrolling through Instagram, then you woke up late and you were super late to your job, and then your stomach hurt really bad again, and you were rushing to the bathroom and you get caught in traffic and your boss yells at you, and then you have the audacity to call yourself depressed.
Like DSM-5, no.
Right. It's like, I'm pretty sure you clicked and subscribed. You know? And I can say that from somebody who has been there. So I mean no ill will, and I know what it's like to be depressed and seeing the world through only that lens of pain and frustration. You know, it sounds like I'm probably being rude or mean and not identifying with them or agreeing to what they're going through, but at some point in time, we have to put it on paper and be realistic with ourselves about what our basic necessities are and what we need to do as people to be our best at multiple levels of analysis: sleep, exercise, nutrition, social interaction, meditation.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And honestly, thinking about it, like, I mean, I feel like being a student in general, all of those things you just mentioned, probably don't get any of it.
Right.
Probably don't get any of it. Just thinking about like back from when I started, like not even pharmacy school, college.
Yep.
Like sleep, no. Meditation, no.
Right.
Like exercise, what? Yeah, so it's kind of sad because I know like statistics wise, it's not like saying that everyone is going through depression, anxiety, or any of those, but based off of like what you listed, it's possible that like maybe 90% of people are in college because like people don't get that. They just don't.
No.
Yeah.
It's very interesting how like complicated people's emotions are and their frustrations and how they feel about what's going on. But then whenever I do something so simple as draw that wheel out and see where they are and just plug in just a couple things. It does not take much. Like the body is the greatest physician that we know of, and you're an apex predator. Like this is the best thing that the universe has come up with so far. It's not some washed up, dirty animal scrub, okay? It can do amazing things. And whenever we give it basic things, it'll do that for you.
That's good to know. Yeah, I probably need to learn some more about that. I like people tell me all the time, like, that's what you need to do. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but.
well, here's the thing. I come across this regularly. It's like what you said earlier. How do you know that you have mental health issues? How do you know that you have depression or anxiety, especially if you've always had them?
Yeah.
That's
like
where.
A normal.
Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? I thought nightmares were like the regular. Like, you can tell me that's not a thing, you know?
What?
Yeah. Or like having a panic attack before you talk to somebody, or like. Do a speech or something? I thought that was just part of the game.
Is it not?
No, it's not. Yeah, I used to always wonder, and I would marvel at how people could hop up and do a speech.
Me too.
Oh, and I was like, what are they, super people? Like, I thought they were just really good at masquerading their symptoms.
Uh-huh.
No, they were just like, didn't have them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're just confident and like,
that's
able.
A thin...
Bizarre, right?
Oh, yeah, I still can't do it. That's insane. That's crazy.
Slowly getting there. That's how I know I know that whatever I'm doing is proof that it works, because I legit had like a panic attack from essentially performance anxiety in medical school. The first time I had to remind you, I'm just like a regular guy from like the middle of the country. That's what I felt like at the time. Standing there giving a presentation to 155 medical students and like five or six physicians, like trained. So like I got out there and I was like, all I had to do was introduce my team. That's all I had to do. Got out there and forgot the first girl's name because I was like, the crowd goes, ooh. Oh yeah, yeah, it still burns me. Anyways, now I sign up for presentations and like I ultimately, you know, I got the resident teaching award for like giving small group lectures and stuff like
that. Oh wow, so, yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, and I love doing those. It's
That's
crazy.
That's impressive.
Now, once you have fun doing the things that you fear, it shatters your reality. And yeah, an example of that I have is cardio. Like I've despised running for years. Like I don't do cardio. Like you work out faster. That's cardio.
Yeah.
And there's one time where I went for a run and I'll be danged that I didn't have a good time. Like I was like, yo, it's beautiful out here. The music is hitting and all this is incredible. And then it clicked. I was like, wait a minute. In my mind, I had only associated this with like pain and suffering.
Well,
and here I am. Right? Right?
I mean, there was a time when I used to think, why people pay for marathons? Why would people pay to like be in pain?
It's just right. Like, sad.
But I think running is a very mental thing too, because I think like one time I trained for a half marathon and before that I hated running and I would not even run for 2 minutes without like dying. Mm. So I remember like, first of all, I got like 10 minutes in and I was like, what? Oh my gosh, I did 10 minutes. And it's like, I went further and further and further. And I realized like half the time, the reason why I stopped is because my head keeps telling me you can't do it anymore. It hurts, like stop. Mm. But then if I like just push that aside and keep going, like I can do it.
Yeah, you can.
It's just,
like, yeah.
It's just mental, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So like we create our own limitations. And this is why you will always hear this, the cliche from all the people doing all the big things is you have to set your own standards. Like, what are you? Are you tired, or are you tired in comparison what you think other people are tired as? And I found myself doing the same thing. Like, oh, I'm sleepy. It's not, or you know, I can't finish this work. It's like, it's not true at all. Like, you have plenty of energy, and you're actually, you know, a big thing for me was like fasting, right? Or like not, I skip breakfast. And for the longest time, I'm like, oh my God, I need breakfast. Like, I can't live without it. Like, oh my God. And then I realized, I was like, dude, you're really not that hungry in the morning. And honestly, you know, like eating slows you down. You get all sluggish and because I always, you know, eat way too much. So breakfast food, which is like back then was exclusively like, you know, carbs and fat. And yeah.
I feel like American breakfast though.
It's savagery. It's savagery. Yeah, it is absolutely ruthless on the metabolism.
Yeah, no, that's true. Oh, and I used to listen to this podcast, and this guy, he's like a, like, he, I don't know if you ever listened to Mindset Mentor, and he talks about, like, he does a lot of, like, motivational, like, inspirational talks, and he said something about, like, motivating yourself. He will, like, challenges his listeners to, like, jump in the shower while it's cold.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a cold shower, jump in the pool while it's still cold outside, and, like, try to stay there for as long as you can, because that's kind of a way to get that, like, been in the back of your mind that keeps telling you like to stop, because it's obviously not comfortable. So like if you can keep going, you're like training your brain to like resist that, like I don't know, it's kind of crazy. I haven't done it.
That's actually part of my program.
Is it really? Crazy. So it's an actual thing.
No, for sure. I did it on before I came over here.
You actually did it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Really, I might try it. It's just so cold showers, just don't do it.
Well, I mean, there are some breathing exercises to pair with them to put yourself in a state to kind of overcome that shocking shrill pain of freezing cold water.
Yes.
So whenever you do those exercises and then do it, it's actually very it's very like how do I say it? It clears my brain fog. It really brings me to the present, brings me to the this moment right here. And really there's some physiologic underpinnings to that too. Mammalian dive reflex. It shoots whenever cold water hits your face and neck, it shoots a wave of parasympathetics down your body, so it'll hit that gas or hit the brake pedal whenever you feel like you're kind of scrambled or all over the place, and it'll help bring some balance to your life.
Oh wow. Yeah. That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Science.
Yeah, we'll try it. I might just do the pool. I don't know if I'll
science plus mentality.
I know, science, I know. Man, okay. Let's
do cold showers.
It's a cold shot. Okay. Peer pressure. I will put that on my calendar.
straight up peer pressure.
Yeah, it seems like everyone's doing it. Like, so I got to try it, right? FOMO. Okay, so I'm because you've kind of answered most of my questions, so I don't even know. I'm just going to see. Oh, I have a question for you. So what are your opinions on like the treatments for like certain mental health conditions? Because in my experience, I see that a lot of times doctors just give you like medicines. They just throw medicine at you. Mm-hmm. I have anxiety. Take sertraline. Take mm-hmm. this, take that. They don't really like do any like CBT, like cognitive behavioral mm-hmm. therapy, which is like recommended as first line. They don't do that. They just throw medications at you. So what's your opinion on that?
It makes my blood boil. Like it's incredibly frustrating, and I've seen it happen before, and it's legitimately not funny. Like, it's not cool. It is not appropriate for the person or anybody really, society, community as a whole. It's very detrimental, and some people, don't get me wrong, don't want anything besides the medicine.
Yeah.
That is their personal choice. But to not offer somebody the evidence-based solutions to their problem, that to me is doing harm. That goes against mm-hmm. do no harm. That's the first thing that we say in like the physician's oath, or Hippocratic oath.
Yeah.
So I don't really tolerate that kind of thing. And I understand that therapy is difficult, and mm-hmm. it's a lot more work, and it's so much easier just hand somebody a pill than it is to sit with them. I get that, but what did you get into it for?
Yeah. And I also think, because in my opinion, the way I think about the therapy is that it's usually not considered to be like long-term treatment, because a lot of times when you're putting someone on medication therapy, you're expecting that you could win them off of it at some time when they get mm-hmm. to like manage their symptoms. But a lot of times it's like they don't give it with the intention of them being able to manage your symptoms on their own. It's kind of like, I don't want to deal with you, so take this and go away.
Right.
Is what I feel like. So it's kind of sad, but.
We're all about quick fixes. Quick fixes, quick fixes, quick dollars.
That's true.
That's why there's a chronic disease issue. But we're some of the best acute care physicians, and one of the best acute care systems in the world. So there's a relationship there, yeah.
Do you think like a part of the issue is that that primary care providers do the, like, because obviously they do the diagnosing, but instead of like referring them to someone, they kind of just take it upon themselves to do the managing on their own? Because I know like sometimes people have like, you know, when they consider it really serious, they refer them. But if someone has like something that is not, like, say for example, anxiety, for example, do you think that it's still important for them to be referred to like a specialist as opposed to like having their primary care doctor manage it?
So if they need therapy and their general practice doctor, which is not trained in cognitive behavioral therapy or any other therapy for that matter, they should be given some of those resources. Yeah, I think so. Or at least referred to a therapist, or given some form of management tactic or strategy for that, or at least inform them that, hey, you would benefit from this. And that's as simple as putting all of those things on a piece of paper and keeping it in a folder. And then whenever somebody pops positive on a depression screening, you simply provide that to them and just walk it through them. It should be that simple.
Yeah. Speaking of depression screening, like, how often are doctors supposed to, because I've never had a doctor do that on me. So I'm just curious, like, is that something that they're supposed to do? Especially like an initial visit type thing?
I think it probably should be, just because of the sheer rates of it, right? Like, we do cancer screenings, we do every kind of, screening for everything else. Like, why not for the most important thing, which is somebody's, mental functioning and desire and will to live? I think it needs to be up there. Yeah. But, as a system, we've long avoided mental health issues because no one really wants to talk about it. Right. That's changing, thank God. But ultimately, unless you're displaying those symptoms during the interview, or talking about them in some capacity, the physician is not going to take the time to screen that, because there's no need to, which I don't blame them, right? Because why would you look for something that there's no evidence that it's there, right?
Okay. All right. I think that, oh, before I end this interview, I did want to ask you, like, what are some good resources, in your opinion, for someone who, like, maybe if they have questions or need to find some information about how to deal with, like, certain, like, if they're dealing with some kinds of mental related conditions, like, where do they go? Or what are some steps that they can take to address it?
Self-education is the most powerful tool that we have. And I believe in empowering the individual to definitely seek their own answers, because my answers are different than your answers, so on and so forth. So it's more along the lines of making that committed decision of, like, I am going to get better, and I'm going to be persistent at it and consistent at it, knowing that I'm going to fail, but also knowing that if I do be consistent with a good attitude, that I'm going to get better. So I started listening to, during my journey, was books, like very regular average, you know, books, and a lot of like philosophy work to simply read what other people had said that were going through things that I were going through, that have provided their experiential solutions. Like they were living their life 2,500 years ago, and they're writing verbatim about the things I'm writing about in my journal.
Oh, wow.
But they're smarter than me, so they came up with solutions to those problems. So I think that, you know, reading about the human story is a great place to start. Second of all, if the Google and the internet, like, and YouTube, you can type in whatever you feel like, and it'll come up, tailored specific to how you phrase it and what you're dealing with. At your education level, Google's good at that.
Yeah.
So is YouTube. So utilize those resources and simply just start, because it's going to be a lifetime thing. And the most important thing is starting.
What about the issue of, like, when you Google stuff and then you think you're dying, or, like, the world is coming to an end?
Right. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I like YouTube videos, to be honest. Podcasts, mental health podcasts,
mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. And by all means, if it's getting to the point where you're considering, you know, taking your life, then definitely go seek professional help, mm-hmm. emergency department, and they'll get you the resources that you need. Same thing with the suicide hotline. But as far as, like, if you're somebody in between, you know, here and there, you know, not that bad, but floating in between, that I definitely, you know, recommend, if you're looking for a book that is evidence-based that helps with depression and anxiety, then it's called Feeling Good by David Burns, and they actually did a study with that book where it treats depressive symptoms.
Oh, nice.
Like, legitimately, just by reading a book, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, you gotta send me that, because I'm probably gonna forget.
Yeah, and I would say, definitely taking care of your body is a huge component of it, and exercise is one of the most powerful tools that we have, and so is some of the meditation practices. And
okay, that's pretty good information. But I do have one question based on, like, something that you mentioned. So this is something I've thought about several times, especially, like, after watching movies and reading about it. But if you have someone in your life that maybe is at that point where they're considering suicide, and I feel like there are times when they're not, like, very apparent signs that they are, or they're going through something. And it's, like, crazy, but it's one of my biggest fears to have someone that I know be going through something like that and not be able to identify or help them. Like, how do you identify it?
Once again, this is the necessity for open and honest conversation between people. We almost have an innate, but training to stay superficial in our conversation. And, you know, I was guilty of that for a long time too, but now, like, my friends, they don't hold back at all. Like, tell me how you really feel. Like, because if you don't, I'm going to know that you're not speaking the truth anyway, because obviously I can pick up on my friends. I've been trained to do this for a while. I can read people, especially if I knew you before and you're acting different now. I can see that stuff almost like that, because I'm looking at the overall approximation of the person and where they're at, how they're doing, what's their tonality, how are they speaking to me, are they positive, negative, what things are they doing, are they active in their lives, and looking where they're at in that little wheel, along with, like, what's their attitude. You can tell, you really can. But the scary thing is that if you're with somebody every single day, they might lose, like, 0.25% every day, but, you know, 2 months later, 3 months later, we're looking at a rough spot. That's how burnout happens too. You don't wake up burned out. It happens over the course of months to years, and so it gets lost. And that's the necessity of that consistent, open, and honest truthful conversation about, you know, am I doing the best that I can do right here, right now?
Okay.
If not, why not?
It's good to know. Well, people, you hear that. Deep conversations.
Yeah, word.
No superficial conversations.
Keeping it real.
No, that's really true. I did notice that a lot. I mean, I feel like I'm different from, because I'm an open book. I just talk. I say what I'm feeling, say what I'm thinking. I used to not be like that, but then I had to get like that because I realized sometimes it's just good to just let it out and like let your feelings out. So a lot of times people like in my life know exactly how I'm feeling or what I'm thinking because I'll say it. But I do realize that sometimes people are not the same way. They're not as open towards like how they're feeling, because, and I've had this conversation a lot. I think part of the reason also is like people don't want to like pour their negativity on you, because a lot of people tend to not want to deal with it. Like if you're having issues and you're talking about it and, you know, I just don't want to deal with it, I'm like, oh, it'll be all right, like it'll be fine, you know, just change the topic, like stuff like that. So I think that's part of the reason why people don't want to like just put all their deep stuff on you, because they don't want to put you in that awkward situation.
Well, there's a frame. Yeah, well, there's a frame of shame and guilt that comes with, you know, depression and anxiety, where it's, you don't even want it for you. Why would you ever want to put that on somebody else?
Yeah.
So it once again, it creates that kind of sense of guilt and isolation. It's a self fulfilling prophecy. It's very scary. So that's why I felt so compelled during third year of medical school to literally reach out to make sure that people knew that I'm not playing. If you need it, my hand is out. All you have to do is take it. And also letting it be known that that is what I want. I literally want it. That is my purpose. That is my desire to work with these people and to help, because I've been there. And then after I fix it, like, oh my God, my life is incredible. I wake up and I cannot believe my life is real. And to go to, from that to like not wanting to wake up at all, to go to what I am now, it's just like, I got to share that with people. I have to do that.
Yeah.
It's a necessity.
Well, that's really good. I mean, that's awesome that you do that, because there's not a lot of people out there like you. So thank you for what you do.
thank you.
Yeah, but that's really awesome. Well, we've been talking for like almost an hour now, so I think it's probably a good time to let you go. But I do want you to drop your, or plug in your social media, or like wherever you want people to find you.
Absolutely. So on Instagram and on TikTok and also Twitter, which I really don't use Twitter, it's all Dr.Benergy, which is energy with a B. Benergy.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And then also on Facebook, it's Benjamin Morell. And I do have a Facebook group that's available. It's a community of like-minded individuals that are all centered around, you know, just doing better, being better, sharing information and lifting each other up. So by all means, go to my Facebook and there'll be links there to get to that health education, lifestyle, and performance group. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for sharing your thoughts and your experience with us. Really appreciate it. I hope that it will touch some lives, or, you know, two lives maybe.
Hey, we'll take that.
But yeah, I really appreciate it. I'm so happy we got to make this happen, because I've been wanting to do it for so long.
Right, well, there's too many good things to be said.
Yes,
for it. So this is going to go well. As long as you stay consistent.
I know.
Like, I'm going to come back on the show, and you're
going to
be like hosting like some
definitely.
Big
I
folks.
Would love that. I would love that. I think that there are a lot of things that people need to hear. My theme here, like I always say, it's like the locus of control, because I've realized that a lot of times, like when it comes to people's health, they always like focus on the external and how like other things outside of them are affecting their personal health. But from my understanding in healthcare, like you have the power to control your health. You just have to have the knowledge. You have to know exactly what you need to do, ask the right questions, things like that. So that's why I kind of started this podcast, to have people like really know like what's out there, know all the information. Like I just lay out the facts, and I do a lot of research to do it, but it makes me feel fulfilled in a way. So I'm glad that you were able to contribute to that today.
It's an honor and a blessing. Thank you, Blossom.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Dr. Benjamin. All right, so it looks like we're done today. We've run out of things to say, or maybe not. We have more coming up. But thank you for listening. I do need to drop my social media again. So my Instagram is HealthFacts with a CX at the end. Also, my Facebook and my website, www.healthfacts.com. com. Okay. Anyways, so I will be releasing my episodes every Wednesday, so stay tuned for my next episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this, and I will see you next.
Thank you.